Welcome to the Biographics Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Whistler. And in today's episode, we're looking at someone who, at the time, he was the only person to have his baby picture flown into space. Although that's probably something that's changed. In fact, it's certainly something that's changed these days because you have those astronauts on the International Space Station. I bet right now they're up there with their baby photos. But at the time, this was a unique thing. He also has another weird thing is that his body is preserved. He died a long time ago. Now it's in a glass coffin in Russia, and you can go and see it. It's still there today. He also overthrew the government of the largest country in the world, and at the time, one of the most important, still is one of the most important countries in the world, but certainly the largest in terms of land area. That would be Russia. Now, to some, this man is a hero. To others, he's one of the most evil villains in all of history. And if you haven't guessed right now, maybe you're thinking Stalin, but we already did Stalin. It's Vladimir Lenin, the man behind the Bolshevik Revolution, and indeed the founder of the Soviet Union. But first, as always, let's go back and look at his early life. He was born in 1870, and his original name was Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov. And I don't speak Russian. I hope I'm doing a reasonable enough job with that pronunciation. But don't worry, he soon changes his name to Lenin, which is something we can all easily pronounce. Now, he was born in a provincial town in Russia called Simbirsk. And now, he was, with most revolutionaries, often there's this, you know, this, he's from a hard background. His parents were peasants working on the farms, and he was born into a life of hardship. But ultimately, he rose from the lower classes, and he became a hero for the downtrodden, demanding better treatment for them all. But the reality is with Lenin is that this isn't really the case. He actually came from a pretty comfortable background. However, a lot of people are taught this about Lenin, this kind of downtrodden peasant beginning story, because, well, it makes for a better story, but the reality is historians seem to conclude that, no, he actually had a fairly happy childhood. His mother, Maria, was actually descended from a wealthy Jewish family who was Swiss-German. She taught French and German to Lenin at home. His father, Ilya, he was the director of public schools for the entire province. So not exactly farming peasant stock here, are they? Indeed, at this time, they were a part of a social group which was called the intelligentsia. This was a group who'd kind of debate philosophy and politics in their spare time. You know, kind of just the average educated people, definitely not farmers. Now, many members of this intelligentsia would go on to become politicians, and they would help shape the laws of Russia. And Vladimir and his older brother, called Alexander, they were certainly no exception. They were kind of expected, in a way, to go into politics. Now, his brother Alexander, he loved studying science in high school, but basically there were no opportunities for him to become a scientist in his small Russian provincial village. So ultimately, Alexander, he moved to St. Petersburg to attend university. Now, during this time, I feel like I've mentioned this in a bunch of podcasts, but as a lot of students do, they become politically active. He joins a political study group, and they begin to discuss the failures of the Romanov Empire. So this is the Romanov family, the royal family, the emperor, etc., of Russia at the time. And Alexander and his crew, they believe that basically the only way we're ever going to save Russia is if we remove the Romanovs from power. And as you might imagine, this quickly led to a problem for the young man. This was not a time where it was really cool to be bad-mouthing the royal family. And if you got in, you know, this is going to be problematic. Now, when he was 21 years old, things quickly escalated. He became part of a terrorist group, and basically they made an attempt to assassinate the Tsar with a homemade bomb. Now, this was a very serious crime, sort of attempting to take the life of the monarch. They were all caught, and Alexander and his friends, they were hanged. This time, Vladimir Lenin, younger brother, only 17 years old. Now, even though Lenin had gone through this pretty shocking tragedy, he still managed to become the valedictorian of his graduating class, so it didn't slow him down, and he went on to law school. He intended to go and become a lawyer, kind of as you do after going to law school, but just a few months into the semester, he joined a demonstration of students who were protesting against the school rules. Now, this is hardly kind of anything close to the kind of actions that his brother took. You know, protesting against school rules, making an attempted assassination attempt on the Tsar, definitely different leagues. But basically, he was being watched pretty closely by the authorities because of the actions that his brother had taken. Now, the combination of rule breaking and his brother's reputation basically got him expelled from school pretty sharpish. Now, at the time, the chap that his brother Alexander tried to assassinate was the Tsar, the Russian Emperor, Nicholas II. Now, at this point in history, he releases the peasant class from their serf status. This basically means that they no longer have to be indentured servants to wealthy landowners. And, you know, this does help relieve the difficulties of a lot of people, but it wasn't really this perfect solution that to the problems that the peasant class were facing. You know, people were still heavily in debt. Many people were struggling to make ends meet. And people saw this as a nice political gesture from Tsar Nicholas, but it didn't really have that much of a practical effect. Like, yeah, you don't have to be an indentured servant to someone, but you still have to work super hard and in these peasant jobs just to kind of make it work. Another problem that the peasant class had was that, you know, a lot of them are illiterate and they're very, very far behind the West in terms of development. It wasn't just these extremists. It wasn't just Alexander and his friends who were hanged who wanted change. Kind of a lot of people in Russia wanted things to really change. They wanted education. They wanted education for everyone. And they kind of saw Russia as having a lot of catching up to do with the rest of the world and especially the West. So let's get back to young Lenin. Now, despite being expelled from school, he did manage to get into law school, goes through law school, blah, 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 blah. He manages to avoid joining any political extreme groups and being executed. Vladimir Lenin, though, he begins a lot of self-education outside of school, and he's reading Karl Marx and a lot of other revolutionary leaders. And indeed, he joins a Marxist study group. This is sort of a place where intellectuals would meet and they would discuss philosophy and talk about the possibility of a Russian revolution. So now we are beginning to see that revolutionary blood of his brother sort of come to bear. Now, at the time, things in Russia, they were getting even worse. We mentioned, you know, people weren't educated. Around this time, after he left law school, 300,000 people, they died of starvation, and that was just near his hometown. Lenin was all right. He survives. He was from a well-off family. They had plenty of money to buy food, but he saw all these people dying around him, and oddly, he didn't really do anything to aid them directly. He was, in a kind of bizarre way, actually kind of happy that they were suffering and they were dying. He knew that if people started dying in the hundreds of thousands, then people would be angry enough to start a revolution. People would see that there is a major problem. Lenin kind of saw this is a sacrifice that must be made because this is how revolution comes. You see this with a lot of revolutionary leaders, and Lenin is no exception. Now, Karl Marx, he wrote that he believed that an industrialized society would be the most likely to create a revolution because he believed that they'd basically rise up against commercialism. Now, Lenin, he didn't kind of take Marx as Marx. A lot of people at the time kind of thought that Lenin was a Marxist, and in a way he was, but he was also rewriting a lot of it to kind of just fit his own viewpoint. He thought that the intelligentsia, the revolutionary intelligentsia, they would guide these uneducated peasants. And basically, this is kind of a different philosophy. And today it's actually called Leninism because it's regarded as so different that it's actually a different branch of communist philosophy. And at this point in history, Lenin, he joins a socialist group. They start taking action. Not like serious assassinate the Tsar action, but, you know, they're not messing around. They start handing out flyers to factory workers. They're basically trying to rile people up to get them to demand more from their employers and the government, more hours, better hours, more wages. And basically, this isn't something that goes down particularly well. And someone ends up informing on them and they all get arrested. At the time, Lenin's 26 years old. He doesn't get executed. This is not, you know, it's a serious crime, but it's not too bad. He ends up going to Russian prison. Now, this is, when I think of Russian prison, I think of like movies and gulags and James Bond being tied up in Siberia or, you know, wherever it end up when the bad guys were the Russians in James Bond movies. This is not the reality. A gulag is not the reality of the prison for Lenin. He was from this kind of royal blood family, so prison was pretty soft for him. He could wear his own clothes, he was allowed to read, he could have visits from his friends and family, and Even more bizarrely, he was allowed to continue writing his revolutionary pamphlets and essays while he was behind bars, and distributing those revolutionary pamphlets and essays was the very reason that he was in prison in the first place. But there we go, Russian prison for the elite. That's what we have. After 40 months in jail, he is basically exiled to Siberia for 3 more years. Now, it's not really prison. It's kind of a government job. They pay him, but it's kind of, you will go there, you have to, like I say, exile, not prison. He spends a lot of this time reading and writing about revolution, kind of like he was doing in prison. And he's sort of free. He has to live in Siberia. I don't know much about Siberia. I know it's cold. It's probably quite wildernessy, probably not the best place. It's probably why they send people to exile there. But the reality is he's getting paid to work for the government. And in the meantime, while this is going on, he's writing all these pamphlets and things against the government. He's doing exactly what he wants to do. So for him, kind of this time in Siberia is actually pretty good for him. He gets a bunch of revolutionary stuff done. Yeah, but I mean, on the other hand, what are the government going to do? They can't really... Could they lock him up forever? I imagine not. That probably wouldn't go down well. Just to give you an idea of how not bad getting exiled to Siberia was, Lenin's girlfriends at the time, even got arrested on purpose just so that she could be exiled to Siberia as well and work some like government job there and get paid. Exile sounds pretty great. Now, they got married, they lived together in exile. I say he's pretty dedicated on behalf of his girlfriend, even though exile doesn't sound so bad. All of this revolution stuff, you know, he's not really going to get anyone interested in revolution in Siberia, or maybe he is, but it's Siberia. It doesn't really matter. He's sending all of these pamphlets back to, you know, further west where his comrades are basically taking all these things and they're putting them into secret newsletters. And they're publishing a lot of Lenin's stuff, but under various different names. This kind of gave the impression that many intellectuals were pushing for the revolution. Lots of people were writing for these secret underground magazines, and that it gave it, you know, it made it seem bigger than it actually was. I didn't actually mention yet where Vladimir Lenin got his name from, and this is actually when he started going by Vladimir Lenin. This was one of the names that he wrote under for the magazines. He basically stuck with it. He was like, yep, that's me, I'm Vladimir Lenin. Anyway, after being released, 3 years in exile, he goes back, he's 30 years old. He doesn't actually stay in Russia, though. He actually goes to Munich in Germany, and basically he goes here. So he can kind of print these Russian revolutionary newspapers without actually getting into any trouble with the police. He'd then have those papers printed in Germany, like I say, and then smuggled back into Russia with the help of fellow revolutionaries that take it across in their luggage. Now, this, why I'm mentioning this in such detail, is one of the co-conspirators here was a man you will definitely have heard of, maybe because we did a podcast, or I think we did a video about him. We haven't done a podcast about him yet, but that was because one of these men, Joseph Stalin, and you know how that story goes, or if you don't, you should. You should definitely go check out our YouTube video on him. I'm pretty sure it's just a YouTube video right now as of this podcast going out, but definitely check out the one on Stalin. I quite like Lenin's story. It's, you know, the revolutionary who comes up and the complicated bits around that. Stalin is equally good and a definitely more popular story. Anyway, the story of the Russian Revolution often says that Vladimir Lenin's rise to power was pretty straightforward. In the movies, it's kind of always depicted as this kind of Lenin, he's this well-respected individual, he's able to rise to power almost immediately. And the reality is this isn't really true. As you've already seen, he's been struggling at this for a long time. He was exiled for 3 years. Revolution was a really long process. You know, big changes take time, even coups. It's a long time in the planning. Yeah, it might be like one quick overthrow, but it takes a while. Now, basically, let's just have a look at Lenin as the man who was kind of planning this revolution. He was not an agreeable man. He had no patience for anyone who did not agree with him 100%. Indeed, one day during a meeting, he insulted some of the socialists, which were, you know, his people. He insulted them so strongly that they basically got up and left the meeting. And when they were gone, he basically said that his ideal group, they're the Bolsheviks, the majority, and everyone else was kind of an elite minority. Anyway, the name Bolshevik here, it stuck. And in 1904, Lenin, he seemed to get a bit tired. He's kind of just in this revolutionary spirit. And then kind of bizarrely, he just seems to get tired. He goes off on holiday to Switzerland in 1904 with his wife for a year. And while he's gone, kind of his Bolsheviks, the people who he really named, they kind of just keep pushing forward without him. And then The year 1905 rolls around. It's a year later, and there's this peaceful protest in St. Petersburg in front of the Winter Palace. And people are kind of holding up signs. They're asking for better working conditions. They want an 8-hour workday rather than the workday just being super ultra long and the working conditions being brutal. You know, this kind of normal protesting, completely reasonable stuff, not always being violent. And basically, instead of listening to their requests, Tsar Nicholas II, it's kind of like, hey, guards, just shoot at them. And this wasn't kind of warning shots. Thousands of people died this day, and it became known as Bloody Sunday, and it kind of really kicked things off. Now, Lenin, he's still chilling out in Switzerland, and he hears the news, and he comes back to Russia. I mean, it's kind of weird. Like, he leaves for a year, and then it takes this to get him back to Russia. It's kind of like, what's up with that, Lenin? When you're dedicated to this. And Lenin basically, even though he's been away for a while, he sees this as his moment. And he begins to preach pretty much immediately that the people need to organize and they need to take action against the Tsar. Now, he might have got a little too excited about the idea of a bloody revolution here, because he wrote all sorts of horrible things and said all sorts of horrible things, like they should pour hot acid on the royal guards. And he gets into even more really creepy specific details, which I'm not going to mention here. It's kind of like graphically horrific, Lenin. Way too far, dude. Anyway, but the problem is there's still not enough revolutionaries willing to really fight for this. You know, they're just not keen to kill people on Lenin's behalf. He's been missing for a year. Where was he? No, you know, Lenin, come on. And at this point, he's like, I know what will solve this. I'm going to go back to Switzerland. I'm going to go, not really, but he does go back to Switzerland, not because he wants a holiday, but because he's afraid of getting arrested in Russia. It doesn't really matter though, because at this point, World War I rolls around and it kind of puts a pause on everyone's revolutionary plans. Indeed, Tsar Nicholas II, he leaves St. Petersburg to join his men on the front lines. Apparently that is something that used to happen. Pretty insane. On the front lines, literally in the line of fire. He leaves his wife, Alexandria, behind in the royal palace, taking care of things, and also with their creepy advisor, Grigory Rasputin, who just the other day I recorded a video about that's going to go out on the YouTube channel, and that is almost certainly one I'm going to make into a podcast, because Grigory Rasputin is a bizarre, creepy, and horrible man who is a fascinating, fascinating character. That video, I'm sure by the time it will be on the YouTube channel, I'm sure by the time this podcast goes out. So if you don't want to wait for the podcast version of it, definitely go check that out. I think that's two plugs. I'm getting into this podcasting thing. Two plugs in one episode. That dude was a freak. Anyway, he also, you know, he had a lot of power. And him and Alexandria, they made some pretty rough mistakes for the government. And yeah, so, okay, Lenin, he's still hanging out in the Swiss Alps. He's writing his revolutionary ideas. These are getting more towards the scale of hot acid on guards rather than, you know, just pamphlets about working hours. He's basically telling soldiers to turn their guns on their officers, that sort of thing, you know, really revolution stuff. Now, unfortunately for Lenin, no one's really reading his papers anymore. No one really cares for these underground newspapers. It's just a handful of active Bolsheviks. People are wrapped up in the war. It's a huge war. It's devastating for Russia. It's an excellent distraction from all of the country's other problems. You know, you don't really worry about an 8-hour working day when, you know, millions of your people are being killed in a horrible and largely pointless war. As well as millions of people dying, it's an absolute disaster for Russia's economy. Tsar Nicholas II, he's looking to gain some favor, and he's like, how could I do this? How could I make life better for the people? And he's like, I know, I'm going to rename St. Petersburg Petrograd, basically as a symbol of devotion to the Russian people. But yeah, it kind of sounds a bit daft in retrospect. It kind of might show how horribly out of touch he is, even though he went to fight on the front lines with his men. But yeah, symbols, they weren't really enough. And so what had really changed? Well, for the first time, thousands of Russian people, they were trained in military matters. They knew how to use guns. And soldiers and police officers, they were just as angry as the rest of the kind of poorer Russian population. And basically, they were swarming the palace. They wanted to take over. They wanted to get rid of the Tsar all on their own. And remember, at this point, this is exactly what Lenin wanted. But remember, at this point, he's in Switzerland. He's writing these pamphlets from afar and no one's really reading them and no one really cares. And he's kind of like, oh my God, the revolution is starting without me. I need to get to Russia and I need to get involved. So what's happening here is there were two political parties split into two groups. There's the provisional government on one side, which is made up of representatives called the Duma, and there's the workers' Soviets, who were controlled by the trade unions and made up of the peasant soldiers and factory workers. Now, Lenin knew that he was no match for the provisional government's leader. This was a lawyer named Alexander Kerensky, and so basically he focused his efforts on trying to manipulate the workers' Soviets instead. And when he arrived at the train station, he immediately got into it. He started shouting, he started saying, you know, people had done a bad job with the revolution, you weren't doing it his way, the right way, blah, 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 blah. He basically said that this revolution is not going to be over until we take down the provisional government. But kind of Lenin, he sounds a bit crazy at this point. Like, he just arrives in this train station, he starts shouting. It's like been a while that since anyone's listened to Lenin. Even the Bolsheviks at this point, kind of the few guys who were left reading his underground articles, even they weren't really into it. The problem was that this provisional government, it was pretty much leading Russia back to war with Germany. World War One still going on at this point. And soldiers, you know, it's easy to rally people for a war at the beginning. Everyone, you know, I don't want to say everyone loves war, but war is easier to get behind at the start. And then people realize how horrific and terrible war is, and soldiers, they're pretty much not really happy to serve in the war anymore. And this was sort of the reason that overthrowing the Tsar in the first place. They were sick of war. They were sick of the bad conditions in the Russian economy, and they wanted the war to be over. So many of them, they basically abandoned their post on the battlefield. They completely refused to go. This kind of stuff. Now, Lenin, once again, he tried to make himself heard. He tried to force his way into this revolution that had started without him. At a speech that he was making, his reputation is tarnished even further, because he's making this speech and someone from the provisional government in the audience basically shouts out that he's a German spy, and then the crowd turns against him. He has to run away. He goes back to Switzerland. He doesn't go back to Switzerland. I'm just joking, but he does run away. Now, Alexander Kerensky, the leader of the provisional government that I mentioned, who was, you know, Lenin kind of say, I'm not a match for him. He could see that Lenin was going to cause a lot of trouble for this provisional government that taken over from the Tsar. So he basically outlawed the existence of this Bolshevik party. This post-revolution government, they've taken over from the Tsar and they're already crushing opposition parties. Hooray for revolution, right? Anyway, Lenin, he needs to get out of there. He puts on a bad wig, he shaves his beard, and off he goes on a train to Finland. Now, the story kind of repeats itself again here. Just we're swapping Switzerland for Finland. And so he's writing down his ideas again. He's sending them back to Russia. No one really cares. But this time, it seems like he's a little bit switched on to the fact that nobody really cares. Now, he decides that it's time, rather than trying to do the revolution thing and become into the new political system and try and take over, he says that instead we need to do this by force. So in October of 1917, he basically sneaks back into Russia and he meets up with the few comrades that are left in Petrograd. He basically convinced his Bolshevik followers in the Red Guard to basically break into the Winter Palace and do a coup d'etat. And they did it. You know, there's not a lot of people following him, but he does have connections. They did it. They capture members of the provincial government at gunpoint. The Duma are arrested. They're taken to jail. And Vladimir Lenin becomes the new leader of Russia without ever being voted in. Just like that. Now, this is why people think it seems quick. Because, you know, suddenly it's like, hey, now he's the leader. But, you know, there's been however many minutes we've been going so far, which has been the entire lead up to his being the leader of Russia. So, yeah, you can't really ignore all of that. Okay, so the next day, basically, Lenin, he addressed the crowd, the entire population, and he said, yo, I'm dictator. This is now what we call the Soviet Union. Cool. He didn't really say it exactly like that, but this is kind of, this was the situation. And Lenin, he really promised them exactly what they wanted. And he did this in the simplest words possible. He said, peace, bread, and land. That's what he will give them, peace, bread, and land. He then ended the war with Germany. And yeah, people were like, this is pretty good. No war, peace, bread, and land. This is what we want. Now, the Bolshevik Party, they wasted no time spreading propaganda that Lenin was this kind of old grandfatherly man who just wanted the best for the Russian people, and that now they didn't need to worry. He was going to take care of them. all seeming very, very nice and good. And if you were in Russia at the time, you'd probably be like, oh, this is pretty cool. Yeah, Lenin seems good. He overthrew these guys who didn't really seem like the best fit after the revolution. And now we've got this old grandfatherly man who's going to look after us. Look, he already ended the war. This is great. But reality, it's a little bit different. Lenin didn't want this kind of peaceful revolution. He wanted a violent revolution. And his seizing power, it was kind of just the beginning of all of this violence. He was like, tenants, kill your landlords. And he encouraged violence against the upper classes. He also removed the Romanov family, kind of the epitome of the upper class, from their palace. And this was a bit of a misstep for Lenin, because the people, they loved the Romanovs, and they protested against this. Now, at first, Lenin, he basically lied, and he said that we're just keeping the Romanovs somewhere safe. But he really realized that they were a big threat to his power, and he had ordered them executed. More about that. We've got a video about Anastasia Romanov, who was the alleged daughter, or indeed imposter, into the Russian royal family. Another one worth a watch, kind of a bit of a mystery one there. So, this is Lenin's beginnings of making Russia a communist nation. Now, he proclaims that every Russian citizen should have good rations, and that obviously, in order to make this happen, the farms needed to be run by the government, because why wouldn't they be? Right. Anyway, farmers, they were no longer allowed to keep or sell the food that they grew, and basically all of the crops, they were spread out among the entire nation. Also, people couldn't choose their jobs. They would be assigned jobs in factories that the government chose for them. And now, you might think that this is really unpopular. This has got to be another misstep by Lenin, right? People are not going to be happy being told what to do. But it's not actually as unpopular as you might think. Indeed, some people were pretty happy about this. It kind of gave them this sense of security. And indeed, Lenin, like we said at the beginning, he's not a monster to everyone. Indeed, he's a hero to many people. People liked communism. Obviously, not everyone did. Imagine if you were a landlord or a landowner or anyone who wasn't in the working classes or the lower classes, you'd be like, this doesn't sound so great to me. And also, then there's the people who were furious at him for ordering the death of the Romanov family, especially the innocent children. He just took them and shot them, essentially. So, yes, as you might imagine, people were not best pleased with him doing that. One of the people who was least pleased with him, certainly, was a woman called Fania Kaplan, who in 1918 attempted to assassinate Lenin. She actually managed to shoot him. She shot him several times at close range, but he managed to survive. She was arrested. She refused to give up the name of her co-conspirators, and she was executed just a few months later. No surprises there. Lenin goes off to hospital. He's been shot several times. He has a long recovery, but this kind of changes him. From that day forward, he's even more violent than he was before. He shows no mercy to anyone who kind of... Do you remember how I said that Lenin was kind of... He didn't really accept anyone who didn't share his own opinion. He was like, I'm right, you're wrong, that's it, my way, the highway. And from this point on, it was even more extreme. Anyone who even expressed the smallest opinion opposing him was kind of... They faced the consequences. This was all rather ironic because kind of on his way to power, Lenin was like, hey, rise up and resist, you know, battle against the people who are oppressing you. Indeed, kill your oppressors. And, you know, that was all fine and well and good until Lenin himself became the oppressor. And then he was like, hey, if you try any of that shit against me, things are going to go badly wrong for you. The same year of that attempt on his life, there's this group called the White Army, and they battled against the Red Army in a civil war. They were hoping to take down the Soviet Union. However, the White Army wasn't particularly well organized, and they lost that kind of internal war. Then, 1919, rebellion quashed. Lenin kind of began an international league of communists. He encouraged people to spread his political ideals, his Leninism, which they thought of as Marxism, to the rest of the world. He truly felt that this form of communism is going to end the suffering of the lower classes everywhere. But just a year later, there's another rebellion that Lenin has to deal with. 1920, farmers are angry. Their grain is essentially being stolen for them for the greater good, being redistributed around this communist nation. And this is the beginning of something called the Tambov Rebellion. That was quickly suppressed and ended by Lenin. The farmers were gassed by the Red Army. Their crops were taken away from their dead hands. Now, there are a bunch of incidents like this which basically send the message of rebel against the government and you're going to suffer the consequences. But despite all of this, it wasn't really working. Now, as you might imagine, from even a cursory knowledge of history, this communism really wasn't working. Millions of people were basically on the brink of dying from drought and famine. And Lenin, he was like, okay, we temporarily got to stop communism. It's not really working out, guys. And he basically allowed farmers to keep the food that they planted and they could sell the excess that they were left with for profits. Now, this is a system that you might know. It's called capitalism. And big shocker here, it was a huge success. People were no longer starving. The economy improved. All of these good things were happening. But Lenin, he didn't want any of that. Once things stabilized, he basically went back to forcing food rations, apparently not really learning his lesson. You know, unfortunately, not every leader who followed in Lenin's footsteps knew to take a break from communism to help during times of famine. Indeed, years later, millions of people would die when Mao Zedong had his great leap forward and just refused to back down from his agricultural reforms. That's a story for another day. It went even more disastrously wrong than Lenin. Also worth mentioning, Joseph Stalin, his successor, he's going to be remembered as one of the worst dictators who ever is remembered as one of the worst dictators who ever lived. And he definitely didn't know when to quit. Now, no one ever did manage to assassinate Lenin. When he was in his 50s, his health began to decline. He had several strokes. Even though he was in poor health, he was writing a journal to kind of give commands from his bed. But he died a couple of years later, 1954, and people were pretty shocked. They didn't expect him to die so young. And, you know, people didn't like him, but people did. Communism was all right for some people. And hundreds of thousands of people, they showed up at his funeral, even though it was well below freezing. People were crying. They were upset that the one man who, you know, all the propaganda said that he cares desperately about you, they were sad that he was gone. After he had died, 5 days later, the city of Petrograd was named Leningrad in his honor. Obviously not today, it's been renamed back to St. Petersburg. It flips around a lot. His body was embalmed. I was right about the embalming, so that people could come and visit him afterwards and pay their respects for, well, as long as they could do that. I think I read a few years ago something about his eyes sinking back into his skull, so they had to like do some sort of repairs to his body. It's kind of weird. It's I don't know. I wouldn't want to have my embalmed dead body on display in a glass coffin for people to come and look at. It's just weird. Anyway, Lenin's death, it was not the end, indeed, his reputation. It became even more powerful after his death. And he was sort of like this legend who managed to not just change Russia, but also several other countries around the world. And plenty of people today would say, well, you changed it for the worse, Lenin. You started this whole Leninism-communism thing that didn't really work out. Communist leaders, though, at the time, they were looking to him on how to run their own dictatorships. The USSR, it continued for decades after his death. And despite all of the setbacks, the system led to more progress than Russia had seen in a couple hundred years. So, you know, that was a good thing at least. Now, before Lenin, the whole country, it was really far behind the rest of the Western world in terms of industrialization, education, modernization. And if it wasn't for all of the reforms that were made by the Soviet Union, they may never have got so far with the space race against the United States, and they might even still be lagging behind today. Take from that what you will. It's definitely not a clear-cut issue. There are all sorts of problems, and it definitely wasn't an easy road to getting to where they are today. And I'm sure it's still a long journey ahead. So there's that. The end of the legacy, though, it all came in 1991. The Soviet Union collapses. All those statues of Lenin, they're torn down, and people, instead of seeing him as a hero, they start seeing him as a villain. People didn't like communism once it was over, or when it was running. Leningrad, it became St. Petersburg once again, like I said. And, yeah, Vladimir Lenin. Don't really know what would have happened without him, but one thing is for sure, the world would have been a very, very different place. That's Vladimir Lenin. Not exactly a cheery one today. Hopefully a few more cheery ones in the future. As always, please do go leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can drop me an email to let me know how I'm doing. If you got requests, anything like that, do that and say hey, simon@biographics.org. And yeah, I think that's all that good stuff. I'll be back soon enough with another Biographics podcast. Thank you for listening.